From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, August the 3rd, 2010. Every week, Directions Media brings you the most current news, trends, and opinions on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
This week, we're going to tell you why geolocation is changing the world, or not. We'll look at a few mobile location ideas where some early adopters have developed LBS apps that have shown some promise for changing the way we work and play. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Manage your field data and immediately share critical business information across your enterprise. For more information, visit www.esri.com/mobile solutions.
Adina, this week what caught our attention was an article on the Mother Nature Network and an article entitled 11 Ways Geolocation is Changing the World. It was written by Rob Reed, the chief strategist and evangelist at Moment Feed, which provides location-based strategies that enable companies to market in the moment. And he listed 11 such applications, or actually kind of concepts, and gave examples of applications that he believes we're changing the world. So we're going to give our take on a couple of these. Each of us have taken three to focus in on. And I'm going to start by looking at the concept of check-ins. And I think most of our readers or listeners are familiar with check-ins. And the idea behind Foursquare and a couple of these others is that it's a game, right? In the case of Foursquare, you get badges if you check into certain locations. If you do it a number of times, you get another thing. And it's a game. But after a while, for me, the novelty kind of wears off. And if nobody else is playing the game, game's over. Where the value is in these notes that people have left at various locations. Maybe it's a ratings. Maybe it's, you know, try the nachos at a particular restaurant. I particularly would find interesting if somebody would leave me a note about whether there's a flight delay, whether there's a road closure. But I think what will happen is that somebody else will come up with a better mousetrap. I think the idea of check-ins, something else has got to happen. Maybe it'll be acquired by a bigger social networking company like a Facebook. In general, check-ins are what I would call, and I think it was described by this guy, Rob Reed, kind of an in-the-moment phenomenon, right? If you're not in the moment very long, the whole concept is very ephemeral.
Well, I think we need to go back to the real purpose of the article, which was to identify ways of using location-based technologies to change the world. And implied in that is changing the world for the better, making us healthier, happier, providing for those in need, those kinds of issues, right?
Right.
So when he talks about the check-in, he suggests one app that I've actually covered in All Points blog called Cause World. And the idea is that you check in at a store or something, and somebody else has provided some funds that then can go to a charity because you've checked in at a department store or something, which is all in good. It's always nice to distribute somebody else's money for charity. But the point he makes is that the locations themselves are not the places where the need is. We're not really highlighting the location aspect of this. And I thought that point was really well taken. Maybe what checking in, what is referred to as checking in for good, or as some of my friends like to say, you know, having a higher purpose in what you're doing, really should be tied to those locations of need. So maybe this should be more about checking in at the soup kitchen when you're going to volunteer, or checking in at the blood drive when you're going to give blood. And those are things that I haven't seen yet. I'm actually very active with the Red Cross. And wouldn't it be great if I checked in when I was at the blood drive in my community and my friends knew it and they knew there was a blood drive going on at the police station and they could come and participate with me? The interesting thing about these kinds of events, soup kitchens and blood drives, just the two I have on top of my head right now, is they're very time limited, right? The soup kitchen is only open certain hours, and you can only work there potentially certain days, depending on how they do it. So these have the sort of temporal issue, but I think that's a nice future for checking in or even to say, tomorrow I'm going to work at the soup kitchen. Maybe you, my friends, can come join me.
Right. No, I think that's a good point. I think that would be a very useful app. And I agree with you. I think it's very temporal, ephemeral would be the word, fleeting. And in the moment, I think, is a good way to describe these check-ins because they will go away. You know, it's not something that's long-lasting.
Right, and I think what we need to get away from is checking into those places that you always go, those places where, that you're familiar with, that are comfortable for you, and let's get you to some places that might be a little challenging. I mean, maybe it's a little scary to go to a blood drive, or to work at a food pantry, or to go clean up a neighborhood that's outside your regular destinations.
Right, I agree with you.
Pull people.
Right.
Use the geography. Yeah, that's
right.
That's... Let me talk about another way of changing the world with these location-based applications noted in the article, eating locally. And there are a number of apps that allow you to find local providers of locally grown food. There's a lot of people interested in becoming locavores, people who eat food that is produced locally. That's all well and good. These, like you just mentioned, are very fleeting kinds of things. The corn is only available for a certain window. And there's certainly apps that say these are the months when corn is available in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not very helpful unless that corn is available from the farmer that's at my farmer's market in the square that runs on Wednesdays and Fridays.
Right. And that would be great if I knew that. If somebody could give me a little note that says, hey, come to this little fruit stand or vegetable stand and try the white corn because it's really good this week.
Right. And that, now is that an app or is that an RSS feed or a geo RSS feed? And are these things, is there enough of this changing regularly that is captured to make it an interesting app? So many of these apps seem to be like you just fell on the planet from Mars and don't know anything about your local community. I live in my city, so I know vaguely that there are a couple of farmers markets. But I'd be far more interested if the information was much more geared to me that at the farmer's market today, there's going to be fresh strawberries from Bedford or whatever.
Right.
I think we need to push this a little bit. It's not enough just to have an app that shows locally grown food.
Well, I think we probably got to stop and make some basic assumptions here because I think if we go much further, we're gonna miss another big point here, which is, number one, it's making the big assumption that everybody's got a smartphone on which these apps are going to run. And number two, as we'll leave in the show notes, a recent post at GigaOM, which is not many people know about these location-based apps. Not many people are using them. And if only such a small segment of the population is using them, you're really confining the utility, I think, of the application.
You're not going to change the world. And the GigaOM article refers to a report that just came out from Forrester,
right,
just to complete that.
Yeah,
thought.
Right, exactly.
Well, you're exactly right. In order for us to change the world by making these small changes in our lives, an awful lot of us have to do it. And I think there's sort of a chicken and egg thing going on here. If people start using smartphones and get excited about location-based apps, they hopefully will be more likely to participate in some of these things that we're talking about. On the other hand, people who are interested in doing these things may find these apps and it may make them participate at a higher level, get more information, those sorts of things. So it's all good. It's just a matter of scale.
And I think as I guess it was the Forrester article pointed out, all of the demographic that is using the geolocation apps is male and young, but also tend to be what you would term as the influencers, right? So these are people that are going to help you understand why you should be using these apps. And while I don't necessarily consider myself an influencer, I'm in the very, very old demographic, and I had to tell my kids how I was using Foursquare, and they're in their 20s. So regardless, this word has to spread out beyond the current small demographic that's using the apps.
Right, and frankly, the responsibility then comes back to the Red Crosses and the soup kitchens of the world to say, hey, you already have a relationship with us. Let's take advantage of this location thing, and we'll let you know when it's been 56 days, and if you're, you know, walking down the street in Cambridge, that two blocks over, there's a blood drive today.
Well, and that's making the other big assumption that the organizations are going to catch on with the utility of the applications. And I'm not sure they've been well educated. I think the only thing I saw, like with Foursquare, was that a casino in Vegas had a big sign in the casino, you know, check in with Foursquare. You're going to need that kind of prevalence among organizations to do the same thing.
Let's move on to your next one.
Yeah, the one I want to talk about next is on political organizing. And it stated in the article that in the next presidential election, politics will not only be local but location-enabled. We saw the power of social media in Obama's 2008 landslide victory. In 2012, location-based apps and technologies will play a central role in how campaigns are organized. So that's a good statement there. I have no doubt that at some level, within a certain demographic, location-based apps for electioneering will be successful. However, that old adage that was mentioned is certainly at play, right? All politics is local. And if that's true, how do you mobilize a candidate's base if most people are not using smartphones, right? I'll go back to that, what we just talked about. And so, maybe at some point the penetration of smartphones is going to reach most people. And I wish I had – I know that ABI Research has done some statistics on the penetration of smartphones, and I'll try to put that in the show notes. But that's what's got to happen first. There were some good things that Obama did. He always put a map up of where he was going to be campaigning next. But on a local level, I'm just having a lot of trouble grasping, and I've become only kind of an arm's length involved in a local U.S. congressional election here in Huntsville with an acquaintance who was running for office. And I'm trying to get them engaged in using location in general, like mapping their contributions. And it's hard to push him, you know, to use this technology. So now you're talking about one step more, which is using smartphones and geolocation apps. So where I think it's going to be important, it's going to be a really savvy candidate that's going to have to latch onto this.
Right, and they've got to figure out what the new thing is. I mean, in the most recent presidential election, certainly there was lots of data. I've mentioned that I know folks who went up to New Hampshire and knew exactly who needed a ride to the polls, and they gave rides to the polls, and they certainly knew which doors to knock on earlier to try to get people to swing one way or the other. But that's old stuff. You know, what's new? Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that I will be standing on a street corner for our local candidates, and that's as location-based as they get. You know, right. You stand on the street corner with a sign.
With a sign, right.
Again, we have to push this a little bit. We're still young and moving forward. The next one I want to talk about is traveling more efficiently. And the idea here is that because you have a smart device, location information, input about accidents and traffic and routing, you can actually drive more efficiently and thus burn less gas, you know, less carbon into the atmosphere, save money, keep the air clean, all those good things. There's certainly been studies that suggest that fleets can definitely cut down on their carbon footprint. Exactly how that translates to the consumer, it probably does, but I'm not sure at you know, how effective it is. What's far more important, I think, is public transportation and these kind of tools for public transportation. And as a big user of public transportation, all kinds of people tell me how much they love the train and they love the subway, but they hate the bus. And the reason that they hate the bus is you never know when the bus is going to come. Well, here in Boston, we finally have upgraded. Now, the vast majority of our routes are GPS. You can actually find out when the bus is coming on your phone. Now, if that's the thing that's going to allow somebody to take the bus as opposed to driving, that could change an awful lot. So I'm all for that, and I hope that more and more cities will get the funding to get that kind of tracking, because if that's the big issue, we can fix that.
Yeah, and I think it's a two-way street, right? First, the city has to recognize the value of letting the consumers, the riders, know when the bus is coming, and the app itself will then become downloadable, right? You'll want that app on your phone. You'll want to know, and so you'll find a way to get that information with this app. So
right, and even when they put out, they started off, I believe, with 5 routes here in Boston, and the big story was there's an ice cream place that's on the bus route, and they had a scrolling sign that said when the bus was coming before, and that, which was all very exciting, but. Yeah, hey, if that drove more people into the ice cream store and onto the bus, all good.
Right. The next one we'll tackle is networking neighborhoods. And the article said one of the hottest categories is in geolocation is neighborhood networking. The vision for many of these apps is to strengthen the very fabric of our communities. Well, I think this is good. I think it's a great app. I don't think it has anything to do with me living in the burbs right now. I think it's probably a great app for urban dwellers, but I'm having a hard time figuring out how it works in the burbs. I think one of the things of the applications that it mentioned, BlockChalk, for example, encourages you to do is to share information about crime. And actually, I think I'd want that information to go to the police and not to BlockChalk. And it should be the city government trying to manage an LBS app or find, you know, tell its citizens where they can, you know, tell people about crime. I don't know if I see that as one of the things that I would use something like a BlockChalk for.
But you'd probably be happy to say this place has great ice cream or Chinese food or whatever.
I would, but you know, that's no different than Foursquare in my
exactly.
mind. You know?
Yes. And some of the many other apps like that, Yelp and
right.
so forth.
And so all of these people are using, you know, again, Blasterous and Yelp. And there's a lot of broadcasters without many listeners.
Right. And this all ties into that whole hyper-local news, you know, what our neighbors are doing, what's going on in the community kinds of challenges that that media companies are trying to get in on and figuring out business models for.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting that you brought up the suburbs because I, of course, live in, compared to you, the city.
Right.
But I have lots of friends in the suburbs. And one of the things that they have become very active with, especially those who are challenged economically in these times, is all of these sort of sharing and exchange kind of communities. And this all started online with email, things like FreeCycle and sharing of goods and services. And out in the burbs, that is surprisingly popular because the people in the burbs tend to have a lot of stuff in their basements that they want to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, may be the place to start. A lot of those kinds of exchanges, frankly, are anonymous to the extent that somebody confirms that they want your old bread maker, and you say, okay, it'll be out on the back porch, and somebody comes and picks it up, and you never even meet that person.
Right, right.
What yeah. these apps really should be about is shaking hands and saying hello, and maybe beginning a kind of connection.
Right, and that's important. I do think also neighborhood watch communities are very important. I think around where I live, crime is not that bad, but certainly when that something happens, you want people to know about it, right? Things can have a tendency to lag. But if I knew that a crime was, you know, happened 3 hours ago, I'd certainly be more vigilant. And maybe
right.
that's
well,
where...
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about wanting to report crime to the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that authoritative source that's going to manage and collect all this stuff.
Right.
Whereas many of these other kinds of things are much more free-form and it's sort of person-to-person connections. Honestly, the best way to get people out to meet their neighbors is to have one of those block parties where you block off the street and everybody
right.
puts a table in front of their house with their favorite recipe that they've made. They used to do that at my parents on my parents' street. I just thought it was because at least you got to know which people live on your street.
Well,
and find out how old their kids are.
Yeah.
I mean, those are great things.
Well, maybe you should share which location-based app you're familiar with and get that.
There you go.
Yeah, right.
All right, the last one I want to bring up, and this is one we've sort of discussed a little bit before, is the use of location-based technology for what this article refers to as enviro disasters. And that's, of course, where you report that you've seen oil or there's been a flood or whatever, and you have a data point that you're going to report. Mostly these are unofficial, non-authoritative, not going to authoritative sources, but more for person-to-person sharing. And frankly, I think that's where they've been the most successful. I remember back to Katrina and earthquakes, and a lot of that stuff wasn't so much about a building caved in here, but that this person is alive and well, and we want to make sure that their family knows it.
Right.
I think people can get really connected to that and may have sort of a higher level of responsibility of making that information accurate. I'm going to throw that out. As I reported from the ESRI user conference, when I asked about how all these apps that are supposed to be out there to help collect information about the oil spill, how that data was actually being used, I learned that the answer was, well, not so much. So I think we're still learning, and I think what I drew from the conversations that I had at the SRI user conference and just from observing is that we've got to, in a sense, combine this idea of Foursquare and acquiring a badge with its with the use of location technology in these kinds of disasters. What do I mean? What I mean is we've got to get people trained. They've got to understand what they're doing, where the data is going, how the data is collected. I saw an app, in fact, it was a graphic on the article, and it said to rate the thickness of the oil, where 0 is no oil and 10 is thick. Without training, I have no idea what thick means, especially if I've never seen oil up close, which you know some of these people may thankfully never have seen. So this idea of gaining a credential, a badge that says you have been trained to be an oil spotter, and then you can submit, you know, maybe then we can start getting some meaningful data that we can in fact use. Because right now, I think it's just a bunch of noise.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things where you're broadcasting, you don't know who's listening. You really do want that authoritative source to be the catch basin for all that's being broadcasted, and to assimilate all the data in a meaningful way. Just think if you had somebody like the Department of Environmental Protection for a state capturing all of the people that were observing. I mean, the miles and miles of beaches that have been impacted by the oil spill, especially here in Alabama, you really do want to know. I mean, there are people who I knew who were going down for a vacation who were questioning whether they should go because they didn't know what was the actual condition of the beach that they were going. And that's where I think some real crowdsourced information is extremely valuable.
Right. It sounds like what we're sort of coming to in all of these conversations is we're looking for best practices for all of these things. And that's really where we're at now. We're collecting information about some of the early campaigns. I'm going to put that in quotes because I mean it across all of these sort of topics, political, nonprofit, helping the world, and so forth. But I think that's where we're heading. And what this article really highlights is how many places we can use this, but how far we have to go.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Our sponsor, Esri, would like to remind you that videos from the 2010 Esri International User Conference plenary are now available online. You can hear Esri President Jack Dangerman share his vision for making GIS available to everyone. Listen to Esri staff discuss ArcGIS 10, see GIS users celebrated, and listen to keynote speaker and TED founder Richard Saul Werman talk about urban supercities. To watch the videos, visit www.esri.com/UC. If you'd like to comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or post a comment at either Directions Mag or All Points blog. We'd like to remind you that registration for the 2010 Location Intelligence GeoCloud Conference is now open. You can save $100 on your registration fees by registering before August 15th. It'll be held this year at the Newseum in downtown Washington, D.C. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.